Have a good show.
Blog Talk Radio.
And that music can only mean one thing. It is time for the worst 90 minutes in sports podcasting. Yes, it's that time again. It is the Two Guys Soccer Show. And this week, the Premier League is back. It wants to know if you missed it and how you feel about its new hair. Rob Manfred says the World Series trophy is just a piece of metal. Hey, Arsenal, Man United, were you listening to that argument? City was banned from Europe for inflating sponsorship deals and not giving Yaya Toure his birthday cake. Jadon Sancho and Erling Brut Haaland keep scoring like a couple of 70-year-olds with both hips and a fistful of Viagra in a retirement community. And there was I wrote that before halftime in the Man United game. But, hey, there was no VAR controversies this week. Oops, too soon. But VAR just finished reviewing a Rooney goal from March. As always, I am joined by Mr. Stead. Stead, how are you doing this week? I feel like it's been ages. I'm telling you, ages since we saw each other. And to define ages, exactly 2 hours.
Agreed. I know, man. It's been a long, long slug in these last 2 hours. I got to figure out what we were talking about all those many, many, many eons ago. But I'm hanging in there, man. Doing all right.
And we'll be joined momentarily by fan favorites, Coach G and British Will. But before we start, we need to give a bit of attention to Harry Gregg, the Manchester United icon, who was the hero of the 58 Munich air disaster, who died yesterday at the age of 87. Gregg was a goalkeeper and Northern Ireland international coach, and he was credited as one of the heroes of the Munich air disaster for his efforts after the plane crash to go in and drag his teammates out. He later played in the FA Cup match against Aston Villa, which they won. He helped save Bobby Charlton, Jackie Blanchflower, and Dennis Violette. So a horrible loss for the soccer community and the Man United community. So, best wishes on the other side to Sir Harry Gregg.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, 87, though, man. Good run. I mean, I'm glad he was able to bounce back and live a good, long, solid life and continue to make positive impacts on the footballing community.
So, great player, icon to the club, credit to everything that was football-related. But how you doing, brother?
Man, I'm good. I'm good. I'm glad that we are kind of reached the end of the whole little Premier League break that we've had. It's kind of an odd break, to say the least, because there were still games on. But anxious to get back to, I guess, regular sporting life, you know? I think after the Super Bowl, there tends to be a bit of a lull in the sporting world, but so it's good to get some semblance of excitement back. So let's get back to, we got Champions League coming up this week as well. So there's a whole lot going on, a whole lot to get excited about. So Let's get it going. Let's knock this out.
And here's where I want to bring in British Will and Coach G. Gentlemen, are you with us?
How you guys doing today?
All right.
That's Coach G. And
that's British Will.
The dulcet tones of British Will. Before we start, as always, we are brought to you by Flanagan's Harp and Fiddle, 4844 Cordell Avenue, Bethesda, Maryland. Maryland and D.C.'s premier venue for live sports and entertainment and the home of the Premier League and the Six Nations. Ireland, pretty close to the top of the table in the Six Nations. Rock on. I'm good. But I want to start this show with the obligatory complaint fest because how dare the Premier League decide to go on break the week after the Super Bowl and leave us with absolutely nothing to do for a weekend. And I actually had to talk to my wife. Who wants to do that on a weekend? I don't know, gentlemen. How are you feeling about this? Coach G, the Premier League
break. I'm loving it. I love it just because Arsenal won 4-0, so maybe we should have a two-week break, have a game, have 2 weeks off. I don't know, whatever Arteta did for those 2 weeks and have his new formation, it kind of paid off. So I kind of liked it for Arsenal purpose, but for everyone else, yeah, I miss soccer. I miss watching it every single week. So one hand, it's good. On the other hand, it's pretty bad.
British Will,
I'm gonna say it. I enjoyed the. I thought it was a good idea for the teams to have a week off. It was an interesting set of situations for this week off. You know, half the teams were playing on the first week and half the teams were playing on the second week, which I think is the Premier League trying to appease some of the more vocal managers that have come into the league from other leagues around Europe, which have a full on winter break. Basically say, yeah, we'll give you a bit of time off. We'll let you rest a few players for a bit because you've got a bit of an insane schedule. So, I mean, it wasn't completely gone. You got some games going on last week. A lot of them were cancelled due to inclement weather. And you had some games going on this week. And we're going to have some games going on midweek for the Premier League because of that lovely rainstorm.
I'm shocked to learn that climate change has affected English soccer. Finally caught up. Instead, I was not happy. After Super Bowl, like, I actually had to talk to people this weekend. It was not good. I am not used to actually having to have a legit conversation. It was like when you emerge and they're like, hey, kid, are you mine? I've seen you since August. Hey, Sparky, do I know you?
Yeah, well, you know what I did over the break was that last weekend I actually watched 4 XFL football games. So, needless to say that, while I do agree with Will about I guess it's good for the players and some of the more vocal managers in the Premier League, but I think the Premier League is wise to kind of go a whole hog during that full-on winter break because every fan wants to watch soccer as much as they can. So by going all in while all the other leagues are on a break, you can get more eyes on your league. But, give a taste here and there for these 2 weekends. Granted, they didn't have the most compelling games. You look through, the games weren't actually all that exciting. But at least that, if you do follow American football, you'll notice that being from the D.C. area doesn't really help, especially in the last about 30 years. And the XFL D.C. Defenders are 2-0, which I can't say I can say about the local other local professional football team that's occurred in quite a long time. They actually scored 27 points, which is absolutely amazing for D.C. football. So, at least that was part of it.
We got a chance. There it is. And there is the benefit. The Premier League talked to Vince McMahon, and they knew that the XFL was launching, and they decided to give us a solid 2 weeks where we could just watch the XFL. That being said, haven't watched an XFL game yet, and I am okay with that. So,
I agree.
We were back this week. A couple of compelling games. I want to start with today's game. Man United 2, Chelsea 0. And Man United does the Premier League double over Frank Lampard's Chelsea. It was an interesting game. And I say that to say, if you look at just the scoreline, pretty comprehensive victory for Man United. They go into Stamford Bridge, which is a place where they don't actually win a lot of games, and run out 2-0 victors. And you say, all right, good. Well played, Man United. But if you actually watched the game, it was something completely different. And I personally, even as a Man United fan, don't think that United deserved a 2-0 victory on this. And yes, there were two goals called out by VAR. We can argue over whether they were rightly done. But I want to get your takes on this game and what you thought about it. British Will, what do you think about this game tonight?
Well, I mean, it was a showcase in a lot of stuff that's wrong with Manchester United at the moment, a lot of stuff that's wrong with Chelsea at the moment, and a lot of stuff that's wrong with VAR in the Premier League at the moment. Chelsea had some pretty nice passing play that didn't go anywhere. Manchester United just looked disjointed, and they played pretty well, but they didn't play interesting and fun. They didn't play it in any sort of manner that made you want to watch them. Made me want to sit down and watch Dan James run up the wing into the corner flag and then lose the ball. I mean, it was just uninteresting to me. And you know, the only part of the game that really gave it some concrete was the VAR controversy and the stuff that you can argue about with that. And as you say, like, we're not going to say if it was the right or wrong decision for both goals. Personally, I think it was the wrong decision for them to both be called offside. I also personally think that it was a very subjective decision to not send off Harry Maguire, who ended up scoring the second goal. But, you know, you can shout until you're blue in the face, and it's not going to do anything for you, so why shout at all?
For those who didn't watch, Chelsea had two goals, both of which were ruled off by VAR. The first was a corner kick, which was ruled out because for a Cesar Azpilicueta push on a Man United defender after he was pushed into the Man United defender by Fred. And the second because if
Half a tooth.
And as I said to Stead, it's kind of not Giroud's fault that his feet are that large. I'm sure Mrs. Giroud is very happy, but his boot was offside. What do you think, Coach J?
Yeah, VAR has forever changed the game. Every goal is going to be looked at through the video, so you know, Giroud and his lovely wife definitely got to bring those puppies back just a couple inches more. But it's tough to say. But, you know, Maguire not getting a red card when he had stretched out his leg by accident or whatever, you know, excuse he gave him after the game. If you got a red card right there, that changes up the complete complexity of the game. You know, we saw that with Tottenham and Son, where he got a red card after the VAR watched it. There's no difference than what I saw with Maguire. So, you know, if that ever happens, the game's completely different. Maguire doesn't score. Maybe the VAR, you know, maybe takes back one of the goals for Chelsea. But it was a sloppy game. Like Will said, like, who wants to watch a James, whoever James is, by the way, run to the corner and lose the ball, and it seemed like it was going back and forth. And there's no complete striker, you know, both of these games today. I'm sorry, the only game today, both these teams didn't have a pure striker, and, you know, we're going to talk about Giroud here. But, like, it's kind of hard just to watch a bunch of midfielders play the game in the middle of the field and once in a while have a lucky break. It was a ho-hum game. It was kind of sloppy at times. But definitely VAR has, you know, changed this game, especially with the goals and the non-red card issue that I had with Maguire.
I mean, another interesting thing is about this. If you watch the Liverpool game, Sadio Mane, if you had the officials in the VAR room today that was officiating for the goal that was ruled, the first goal for Chelsea that was ruled offside, Sadio Mane's goal would have been ruled off as well. And I can't see how that would have, like, those are the two in the same incident in the same weekend again, and they're completely different calls.
And that's the issue with a lot of the fans, because, you know, how can we still be, I guess, you know, fanatics about this game when you don't know with a VAR? It's just like human judgment. You know, sometimes they get it right, sometimes they get it wrong. But now you have VAR, who's got video evidence, and they're still getting it right. So is this technology really going to be here to stay for a while, or if it's going to be streamlined or something like that? It's hard to tell, but I agree with you, Will. One game it's one thing, another game it's completely opposite.
Stead, you brought up a very interesting point when we were chatting off recording about VAR and celebrating goals and how one team can and can't. So why don't you go with that?
Yeah, I was really just talking about the a lot of people talk about the soul of the game versus the letter of the law, and it seems like the what VAR has done is it's taken away the greatest part of the game, and that is celebrating goals. And, you know, I'm sure that there are several fans out there now who are going to be reluctant to immediately jump in and celebrate any goal that they see, because you never know if VAR is going to step in and cause something to change. And that is that's upsetting, of course, to the fan experience, unless, of course, you're on the opposing team and the team you're playing against is just drawn or taking the lead from you, and you see that VAR and you have a little bit of hope that maybe they won't call it, that maybe that goal will be called back, versus the whole thing about, well, VAR is there to actually implement laws for the game, but is that really why it's there, or is it to assist the referee? So again, it gets back to the inconsistency of the whole thing. But to that end, is this just going to be something that we, you know, we spoke about this earlier, that the players and the fans have to kind of get used to a new way of being and have the players adjust, so maybe they will be a bit more mindful of their positioning when they are offside, maybe to be less handsy in the box as they are. I mean, we saw what happened in the World Cup 2 years ago where they were giving penalty kicks because players were just getting tackled in the box on corner kicks. So I'm not saying it happened often, but it did happen. So, I mean, it's kind of like Brave New World in a way, and is it something that's just going to go away if people complain about it enough, or is it just another thing we're just going to have to get used to? But and changing that ability to celebrate the Giroud goal was beautiful. I mean, it was a beautiful goal. To take away that celebration is going to be, especially for a home team, that's going to be a tough pill to swallow.
I heard an interesting thing that they were talking about with the offside rule, with sort of a 10 centimeters tolerance. So this takes away, like, because originally the striker is even with the defender, that's a goal. No matter if one part of his body is a few millimeters offside. Now it's, you know, they've got these perpendicular lines they draw on the pitch, and they get the exact measurement of where the player is. I think that they're probably going to implement something like this 10 centimeter tolerance to bring back goals that have, you know, sort of, is it offside, or is that just a perspective of the camera where they have to draw these lines for about 2 minutes? I don't think that VAR is going away. I think that they're going to have to really strongly look at how leagues that have implemented VAR well, i.e. the Spanish league, the German league, and even the MLS, how they've done it and how that's working out. But I don't think it's going away, but I do think they're going to lighten the sort sort of his toes offside, so he's offside.
I disagree with that because VAR was brought in to address specifically those sorts of things. And it's what I would like them to do is go to a system like the XFL, like cricket, like rugby, where they mic up the VAR official and I can actually hear what they are saying and mm-hmm. what they're thinking and why these decisions are being made the way they are. And when years ago, when it was first brought in the Confederations Cup, it was brought down to me as, hey, I'm up in the replay booth. I'm above the match official, and I'm going to say, hey, boss, you need to have a look at this. And I would like to hear those deliberations as to why they make the decisions that they make. And I think if they give us more transparency, we will have less of a problem. Because I'll be honest, it was by the letter of the law, it was clear. Olivier Giroud's foot and his shoulder were offsides. And, yeah, Olivier Giroud has big feet. Again, I'm sure that Mr. Giroud is very, very happy about that fact. But his foot was offside. And that was why that was brought in. And I said to Stead, I said, it reminds me of a Redskins game back, what, 20 years ago, Stead?
Possibly. Which game were you referring to?
The Ernest Biner.
Maybe longer than that. That may have been close to 30 years ago.
Ernest Biner was tackled and they ruled it a fumble on the field.
That's more like 30 years ago. Yeah, that was a long time ago. That was in the 80s.
I thought it was in the run to the Mark Rippon Super Bowl.
That was
1991.
That's 30 years ago. That's hard to believe, but that's 30 years ago.
And Ernest Biner, and they go back and they replay, and it clearly shows Ernest Biner's arm is down, and he has possession of the ball on the ground called fumble. That's why replay is there, to make those corrections that we can't. Now, before I go too much further, we've got a gentleman holding on the line. He is brought to Larry the Insurance Guy. He is breaking his podcast cherry this week. Larry is brought to us by Catalano and Stefani Insurance, handling your New Jersey and Pennsylvania insurance needs. 856-352-6965. Mr. Larry, how are you doing this evening?
What's going on, guys? How you doing? Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Welcome.
Now, Larry is here for one reason and one reason alone.
Well, I wanted to just say one quick thing about VAR, if that's all right, if you don't mind me jumping in here really quick.
Yeah, because nobody else saw it.
What's that?
I said nobody else does. No, we don't cut each other off and jump in when we don't need to.
I just wanted to say one quick thing with the VAR is, what was wrong with the game before it came in? You brought up one play about Ernest Biner 30 years ago where there's probably been a million football plays that didn't need it in that time.
What was one thing, Larry?
Destroyed the game, in my opinion.
What was one thing, Larry? How about the 2018-2019 title race when Liverpool was playing Manchester City? Vincent Kompany just so happened to take down a Liverpool player who's running through, clean through on goal. Should have been a straight red. He only got a yellow. Those are some of the reasons that VAR was brought in.
But Liverpool, and nobody actually cares about what they say.
But, no, I agree with you. That should have been a straight red. But did VAR change it to a straight red?
I mean, we're going to say we don't know because VAR wasn't in production. I happen to think that some VARs would and some VARs wouldn't. But,
And I agree with that. I totally agree. I mean, I think it should have been a straight red. I think that it's kind of like these referees kind of do a half-assed job now. knowing that they've got backup behind them that's going to cover that if they miss something. It's just, you know, again, nothing to get upset about just because nothing's going to change what we're saying. It's just, it's frustrating when you can't celebrate something because you're holding your breath. Like, is he offsides? Is there a push? Where's the VAR? You know, it's changed the whole outcome of the excitement of the game, not to mention it's adding all this extra time on because it's never quick.
Those are some good points. I mean, you know, I think that the VAR argument has been argued out so many different ways, so many different times, that as long as you listen to a soccer podcast, you'll find all of the arguments.
Yeah, exactly.
So
I think if they scored it, I'm not against the rules being right because Drew was offside today, and it should not have been a goal. It's just I feel like the timing of it, things are inconsistent, and they have a lot of work to do with it. I'm not against it. Well, I guess I say I'm not completely against it because it is giving you the right, you know, the right call. But there needs to be a lot of changes to it. That's all.
Yeah, they do. So we do want to get into this. Man City this week got a 2-year European ban and a £30 million fine for financial irregularities on against financial fair play. Now, Larry, you are a City fan. Give us your perspective on how you feel about this and what you think is going to come of this.
Well, devastated is an understatement here, considering I know everything that kind of goes into it as far as the ramifications of it. But I'm also kind of a realistic person where if I step away from it, if what they did is 100% accurate, then, you know, they have no one but to blame but themselves.
Now,
you know,
for those of
one of those. Go ahead.
For those who aren't familiar, a lot of information was released through football leaks and published through Der Spiegel, a German newspaper. And basically, Manchester City cooked the books, and they overstated some
The sponsorship
finances, the sponsorship revenue, and they lied on their application to both the Champions League and to the Premier League, and that's what the best way I can put it is it's the soccer equivalent of money laundering. And
they were basically calling it accounting fraud.
Yeah, and. Mm-hmm. Normally, this gets you 8-9 years in jail. Looks a lot like wire fraud. But you're facing a 2-year ban and a $30 million fine. Larry, can the team survive this?
It comes down to what the final appeal with the Court of Arbitration for Sport comes down to. If it's the full 2 years, I mean, I don't know if you guys saw today, Pep had a talk with the team and really just said, I'm going to be here. We need to stay together. Now is not a time to fall apart. And it's all well and good to say that. But when you got players that are in the prime of their career, and these guys make a ton of money, they'll be financially impacted by Champions League bonuses, other European, you know, obviously they're not going to be in Europa most likely, but so the Champions League, stuff that has to go with that. Financially, they're hurt. But these guys make a ton of money that they almost don't care about money anymore. They care about trophies. They care about the competition of it. And if they're not there, I mean, I don't even want to speculate to think of what's going to happen to, you know, some of my favorite players that could just be like, you know what, this is what we want, and some big clubs are going to pay us a lot of money. You know, Madrid's already talking to Sterling. And, again, all those transfer talks are all hogwash, most of them. But they got guys that are there to be in the Champions League because of Pep. And without that, you know, it's tough. I mean, I'd like to see the players really kind of stay together and do what they can. It kind of would be an even cooler story as a City fan if they do come through this and stay together and but I don't know. It could be bad. They're going to have to possibly sell players. There's all kinds of stuff that goes into it with the fines and the loss of revenue from, you know, from leagues and from the Champions League. And, you know, we're even talking about the Premier League, you know, getting demoted. That's an extreme, but they're talking about it.
Well, so
go ahead, Will.
Go ahead. So the funny thing I find about that is, yeah, I think that a team like Manchester City, if, you know, they get the two-year ban, let's just say nothing happens in the Premier League, they get the two-year ban, I don't think the players stay, just purely based on the type of team that Manchester City is. They don't have that culture in the team. It's a team that had money pumped into it, and now is being told, you know, you pump the money in, now you have to sit on the sidelines for 2 years because you did this. Those players aren't going to want to stay because they're not loyalty players. They're players that are bought. So they're bought and paid for, so another team can buy and pay for them. That's my point of view on it. Like, they can say they're citizens till they die, but when the hammer comes down, I don't think they're staying.
Coach Jim, what do you
with
think?
With quite a few players.
What
yeah,
do you think?
I think there's only, I think the only true City guy is Kompany. He'll be there until he retires. But everyone else, they're going to be coming and
he's
going.
Already gone.
And
he's already gone.
Kompany
got,
he's already left.
Know, but he was the only one that had allegiance with the team, and you know he's gone. So everyone else is going to be gone too. And Pep's got 1 year left on his contract. And if you win, you know, if his major goal is to win a Champions League, he's not going to be around for 2 years. And even Juve now has started talking about trying to get him. But if he has such allegiance with, you know, De Bruyne and Sterling and Edison, all those guys will leave as soon as Pep leaves. You know, they're not committed to the actual club itself. They're committed to the coach. And, you know, this put a lot of sour taste in the coach's mouth. I'm sorry, the team's mouth. And put $43 million anyway. They have plenty of money. They can just, you know, get rid of that fine. But if Pep's not going to be there after his contract up after this 1 year, the second year in their suspension, it's not going to matter just because I think everyone's going to leave. Everyone's going to be chasing that money and chasing those, you know, the bigger teams that aren't going to have this kind of cloud over them right now. But, you know, they still can have, you know, to transfer some in and sign anyone they want to, you know, so that's not really hurting them on that aspect. But I think the longevity, I think it's going to hurt them in the long run once Pep decides to leave and, you know, all the young blood, you know, try to leave and everything else. It's going to be interesting to see what happens, and definitely, man, you can have a lot of fun talking the crap about them next couple of years. So it'll be fun to see. But, yeah, Cindy, I don't think they're going to be around much longer after this year. So we'll see what happens. It'll be interesting.
Dad, you and I were talking about this. The Champions League thing is big. The EFL has the wherewithal to send the Man City down to League Two. I don't think they're going to do it, but let's play that out because, hey, it's hella fun to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Man City playing in League Two. What does that look like?
We know the kind of we were talking about earlier. Beyond equating it to the Ranger situation, you look at like Portsmouth, and you look at other teams that have kind of like fallen down that were Premier League teams recently, who of course didn't have a quarter of the success that Manchester City has had. But you got to figure, you know, Manchester City should be able to bounce back at least get out of League Two, get out of League One in a year for each round. Because even though they won't be able to afford the players they currently have, they'll still be able to afford top tier players for those particular leagues. And I would expect that, granted, they'll lose a whole lot of money from their TV revenue, but, you know, they have the whole football, the City football group where they have teams all over the country, all over the world that they claim to, you know, sponsor, and they have this kind of network, which is another way that they're, you know, kind of able to cook their books in a way. But it doesn't seem like it will be as detrimental as it has been for, like, Portsmouth. But to think that they would get back to the level that they are now is at least in any time in the near future, is definitely going to be very difficult to undertake. I think the bigger implication for this whole thing, too, is that, you know, City is going to City is appealing, of course, but to think that, let's say City was able to actually pull this off and get an appeal, the bigger impact would be necessarily if this doesn't work for UEFA, because they seem to put in all their chips that this is something that they're going to be really enforcing. If this does not work, this basically takes a lot of power away from UEFA, and you can see teams from all over Europe saying, oh, wow, UEFA tried this with City and it didn't work. We can do whatever in the world we want. And I know PSG is heavily rooting for Man City to pull this off because they're next if they don't.
I mean, the thing that I find very fun – go ahead, Michael.
No, go ahead, Will.
So the thing I find funny about that is I think that City – even if they're relegated to League Two, I'll get back to the death of FFP if this doesn't work. But even if City is relegated to League Two, I think within 10 years' time, they are back performing where they're currently performing. And the reason I think this is the success of RB Leipzig in Germany. This is a club that was refounded in 2009. Mm-hmm. And is currently competing in the Champions League. That's the effect that money can have on a team.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Parma was relegated to Serie D for not finding a new owner a few years ago. They're back in the Serie A. I don't know if they're back this season or last season, but they got back to the Serie A. They didn't do as well in the Serie A, but they got back. So, but they didn't have the type of ownership that RB Leipzig had. And I think that the inherent backing of the UAE to the City Group will allow City to get back into the Premier League and back into the Champions League. And if it's not City, then the UAE is going to sell City and they're going to buy a new team in England and they're going to put them up in the top four.
You see Swansea in the top four. It's Cardiff.
Go buy Newcastle. We know they're for sale. Larry, as a City fan, what is the best outcome that you're hoping for?
Best outcome is, well, obviously, you're hoping it gets appealed. And they even talked about it going if the court of arbitration says they upheld it, it could go to a Swiss court if they wanted to. I mean, in the best case scenario, obviously, is that it gets dropped. I think the one thing, and I don't believe that it is going to get dropped, but I think the one thing that these courts or the city's lawyers are, and they're paying obviously a ton of money for, they're going to try to attack UEFA because they're the ones that initiated it. They're the ones that prosecuted it. They're the ones that judged it. So, you know, there was no outside, you know, whether UEFA wanted to go after City or not, there was one body that did all of it where City's trying to say, hey, if you had somebody else looking at it, you might not, you know, there might've been some contradictions to what you were saying, but how I kind of think it's going to play out. Go ahead.
No, keep going.
I think they're looking at it'll probably get appealed to 1 year. They're going to dock some points in the Premier League. I don't think they're going to demote them. I think that's highly unlikely. Could it happen? Absolutely. But I think that's one of those, you know, further stretching rumors that are going around right now because of the rules that are set in place. I'm hoping that it'll be a 1 year appeal, 1 year, you know, change to 1 year. You're going to lose maybe a player or two. I mean, and it's something that they, as we just talked about, they've got the money financially. As long as they're doing it correctly, they can bring in whoever they want, whenever they want, you know. So I think it's just a matter of time before they're competitive again if they don't get that two-year ban. I think if it's two, you're going to lose a lot more players. One, you'll lose a couple. I could be dead wrong, but I think just one or two – or 1 year is a big difference than two.
Well, to the point it was a campaign prosecuted by UEFA. The thing that I think that's a bit of smoke and mirrors from City, because this is basically the case from 2014 that City got fines from FFP. because this case was basically, you know, City was modeling its sponsorship to bring in new players right at the initiation of FFP. And at that time, they paid a fine, and part of that fine went to the president of UEFA at the time, which is our current FIFA president, Gianni Infantino. So that enriched him. So basically, they bought off the president of UEFA, and they said, you know, this is the end of it. And UEFA couldn't – they brought in independent investigators for this, and they couldn't definitively pin it. And then in 2018, there was this leak by this Portuguese national to Der Spiegel in Germany, and this leak confirmed what was being said in that 2014 case. So, like, that's, I think, the route that City will probably go, basically arguing to the Court of Justice, because UEFA is not a court of justice, that UEFA is pursuing a double jeopardy for this. They'll say, yeah, we were in the wrong, but this is double jeopardy because we already paid a fine for this. And now we're asked to be paid a fine and do an exclusion, which are both parts of what the FFP says they can legally, they can do in their competition. There are 8 things that they can do on their competition. But I think that they're going to go to the Court of Arbitrations Court and say, this is double jeopardy. I think that's how they're going to approach it. Because I don't think it was a campaign prosecuted purely by UEFA, because they had independent investigators in 2014 that just couldn't completely link it. Which is all a bit technical and legally, and I'm sorry about that.
Yeah, I apologize for that, because I didn't even understand what you were saying.
My better half
should have cut me off
that. You get some of that.
Yeah, nah, they did, but we'll continue to follow this. This has been probably, I would say, the biggest story that we've had. And that being said,
let me ask you guys a question: how do you think how do you think City's gonna react in this Champions League? Are they gonna be motivated? Does it not matter? Are they gonna lose or beat Madrid either way?
I think that City's going to go out and do everything that they can. Winning the Champions League it's a lot. I've seen my team win it. Will, you've seen your team win it. We've seen amongst our teams them compete for it. There comes – it's a lot to go out and win that. And I'll say the year that we won it back in 08, all the things that had to come right for United to win the Champions League that year required a lot. I think City are going to be motivated – and I say that to say I think City are going to be motivated, but I don't know if motivation is enough. I don't know if you can win the Champions League just on motivation. Things have to go right for you in the course of that tournament for you to win it. And I've seen what it is, and the margins are thin. Who would have thought that Barcelona could overturn the deficit that they did against PSG? You know, who would have thought that Liverpool could get that penalty against Tottenham to set them off and running last year? It's a lot. And that's why, to be honest, that's why I think Real Madrid's string of 3 straight in the modern era was so impressive.
Mm-hmm.
Things happen in that tournament, and that is one of the most unpredictable tournaments, and that's what makes the Champions League great, and that's why we love it, and that's why we're all going to be watching on Memorial Day weekend when the final is hosted. I think it's Memorial Day weekend. I haven't looked that hard, because it is, for my money, it is still the best tournament, and I challenge any one of you to come up with something better. Yep. Silence.
That's right. Dolby silent.
You're
not gonna hear anything from us.
Yeah. Right. So I do want to give a shout out to Flanagan's Hopping for the 4844 Cordell Avenue, Bethesda, Maryland, Maryland's premier venue for live sports and entertainment. That's where Stead and I were down watching the Chelsea United match this afternoon on the big screen with the 100-inch and the HD, and God, it was gorgeous. I felt like I was in the middle of the game.
Mm-hmm.
But we need to turn around to other stuff.
Wait, Michael, before we leave, just one question I've got for you. One question for you.
Yes.
If this City thing pans out and they decide to strip titles from City, would you be in favor of that, or would you be against it as a Manchester United fan? Because you would get the 2012 title and you would get the 2018 title. Because those titles were all directly influenced by the City money laundering scheme. But Liverpool will get the 2014 title, and Liverpool will get the 2018 title. So would you be in favor of it, or would you not?
I'll turn it around back on its head to you. Do you want to be retroactively rewarded a title that you didn't win on the pitch?
I mean...
Yeah, the players never had any involvement with this stuff. It's all the management. So why should the players be deducted all these championships and winnings and loses and stuff like that? It's not their fault.
This is the Houston Astros. This is us taking titles away retroactively. The NCAA does that, and we laugh at them because we all saw it be won on the court. We all saw it be won on the pitch. We all know the championships that City won and when they won them. I saw it. I was there. It broke my heart when it happened, but I saw it. And I don't care that they cooked the books. I don't care that they overstated. They won the titles on the pitch, and that's what matters. The one thing that I love about the Premier League is at the end of the year, the league table is what the league table is. Leicester City won it because they won the most points. Liverpool will win it this year, we suppose, because they will have the most points. I don't want to go back around and start saying, like, we're going to take it away because this team, their registration was off. No, they won it. It's fine. Let them have it. I still got 20. I'm good.
I was just wondering if you would feel differently.
No,
I think
although
I do agree.
Would be happy if City lost it as opposed to their team winning it.
No, I agree with you. I don't want the Wikipedia asterisk next to the 2014 title. Liverpool came in second, but they were given it. You don't want
and
the Wikipedia asterisk next to you.
And we all watched in 2014, and we know why Liverpool lost it. By the way, thank you, CVG.
That Crystal Palace. No, it wasn't CVG. It was Crystal Palace 3-3.
Yeah, thank you, CVG, for tripping over your own feet.
That too. Anyway, moving it on to what we were going to talk about next, which I believe was a lovely Erling Haaland and Jadon Sancho. I'm going to start it on the Erling Haaland point. I think that they're the next to Aubameyang and Lacazette for Borussia Dortmund.
Oh, my God. Can those two stop scoring? Like, I'm like, those brothers are like an 18-year-old in a brothel with a fistful of hundreds. Like, can you stop scoring? Haaland and Sancho. And how long are we actually going to see this pairing? And should we just enjoy it while we can? Because they can't stop scoring goals. Each had a goal this weekend, and they just keep scoring. That being said, Borussia Dortmund's still in third in the Bundesliga because Borussia Bayern Munich won. And the irrepressible German machine keeps churning out victories. How do we feel about this Holland and Sancho signing? And can either one of them do it without the other? Coach G, what do you think?
I say let's sit back and enjoy the show, because all they're doing, every single game that they're playing, they're just making more money in their bank account in the future. So I imagine if Chelsea or even Liverpool, one of the big boys from the Premier League, are going to give them a bunch of money. So I say sit back, relax. Let's watch these two 19-year-old boys just start destroying the Bundesliga, and eventually they'll be split up. But, yeah, you expect them to be a little bit higher in the standings, you know, higher than even Byron, but, you know, these two young boys, man, like, it's unbelievable what they're doing as a pair. I think separately you won't have that kind of result with them, but they definitely feed off each other very well. They're both English guys, too. You know, I think Harlan, if I'm not mistaken, he was raised in England, like Sancho. So they both are very familiar how to play the English game, so they play very well with each other like that.
All right, Larry. You watching that?
Yeah.
How do you feel about that?
Kind of like what was just said. Enjoy it. I'm surprised that Sancho is still with BVB right now. I thought he would have been swayed within the last year or so. I mean, Holland going over there is just – I mean, they're just playing really, really well off of each other, and enjoy it while we can, probably in the next year or two. It was just said, they're playing. They're just adding to their resume every single game for them to make more money whenever they're gone from there. It's kind of a shame. They're just BVB, just kind of, you know, they're like the minor league, or they're just like the farm system for a lot of premier teams, where, you know, young players go over there, make a name for themselves, show they can play, and then move on.
You can make a lot of money doing that. And we've seen Borussia Dortmund make a lot of money doing exactly that. Well, Liverpool is supposedly in for Sancho. Where would he possibly fit into that team?
I saw the sort of the linkage towards Jadon Sancho. And I was interested in it. Especially because next year is the Africa Cup of Nations, and next year the Africa Cup of Nations will be moving back to the winter.
Don't get me started on that.
So, you know, it's always nice to have extra forward-minded players in the team to give a little bit of rotation, to give a little bit of extra depth. At the same time, do I see Liverpool moving for a highly rated Englishman that's going to cost them over £100 billion? Absolutely not. The person in the Bundesliga I could conceivably see them going for is Timo Werner. You know Klopp loves the German, and you know Klopp loves the Bundesliga as a recruitment ground. And you can see Roberto Firmino dropping back into a center attacking mid role, still playing Salah and Mane, and playing Werner up at top in the striking position. And then you would still be playing Henderson and Fabinho at the same time in a central defensive mid role. So that's how I could see them pilfering the Bundesliga, but I don't see them going for Sancho.
I think Kai Havertz is a more likely transfer target for Liverpool, because he's a little bit more affordable, and I can't see Liverpool ponying up the $120 million that it's going to take to get Jadon Sancho. Now, Stead, he's got no place in Arsenal.
No. Well, Arsenal doesn't have £120 million anyway. So, you know, Arsenal's not have that kind of money. And Arsenal could, had they not made some pretty, you know, bad decisions in the past 5 years. But, you know, to go back to Borussia Dortmund, though, and these two players, we talked about maybe a year or two. I'm not sure that it's going to even be that long. I think they took a bad loss to Bayer Leverkusen last weekend, losing 4-3. And because they could be in second right now, really like kind of breathing down Bayern Munich's breathing down their neck. So, you know, hopefully they can actually have a good run. And I'm pretty sure that Haaland isn't cup tied. I think he can play Champions League. I don't know. I'm not 100% certain. So at least that'll let them put pressure on PSG. Because as I've said ad nauseum, I don't have any faith in PSG until they actually prove me wrong in the Champions League. So, you know, yeah, I mean, Arsenal can't afford any of these players, and Arsenal have so many other problems right now before they can start thinking of that one big splash that's going to actually put them over the top. So, you know, I mean, I was really happy about that 4-0 win. Of course, that just put them in 10th. But, you know, hey, Arsenal's one of, what, five or six teams in Europe that have not lost yet this year. Granted, they haven't – I don't think they've only won twice because they keep drawing, and you have a team that's got 13 draws in the Premier League, and actually the teams that are ranked below them have more wins. It's really, really sad about the way that things are going down in North London, but I'm not going to get off on my rant. We're talking about Sancho and some of the young players over in Dortmund. And, again, I am tuning in a lot more. I like the fact that the Bundesliga is still accessible on TV in the United States, so I'm definitely trying to watch as much as I can. But, you know, I could easily see both of these players being off of that team by the end of the summer. Manchester City, though. I know that.
I don't think Sancho will be gone by the end of this year.
Mm-hmm.
Haaland is a different situation because the buyout clause doesn't kick in until next year.
Mm-hmm.
But you may get another year out of him. But that's what Borussia Dortmund do, is they
mm-hmm.
buy players and sell them. And
mm-hmm.
that's how they keep – and their ability to develop young players and get them in and give them games and get them developed. Sancho got sold by
mm-hmm.
Manchester City
mm-hmm.
because they weren't – goes
mm-hmm.
over. And I got to give full credit to Borussia Dortmund's scouting staff. Because they have turned up with some gems.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think it's – I think it's a little bit of who they bring in, but then also how consistently they are able to develop them, because we've been through three regimes, and they still are able to consistently get the most out of teenage talent,
mm-hmm.
perhaps more than any other club in – the world.
I mean, they're almost the new Ajax in a way.
Perhaps more than Ajax because...
Yeah. In recent history, absolutely.
This is a team that has legitimately made a couple of long Champions League runs and a Champions League final in recent
mm-hmm.
memory where
mm-hmm.
Ajax hasn't.
Mm-hmm.
I think... We look at Ajax, but we look at Ajax over the course of the last 2 years. And they've already said, after Ziyech signed with Chelsea, they could be facing like nine players out of their starting 11 leaving this season.
Mm-hmm.
Jeez.
I don't know how you come back from that.
Yeah.
I don't know how you come back from that. I don't even know who the nine that they're talking about are. Let's be honest. I like, outside of Donny van der Beek, Hakim Ziyech, I'm not 100% sure who the other seven that everybody's going to want to buy are. Like,
Onana, the goalkeeper. Onana is
one, and the American back who just is another.
Yeah, Sabino Dest is getting picked up on.
Yeah, but
quite a bit, yeah.
I'm not even 100% sure right now. I've seen enough from Sabino Dest that I'd like to pay that money for him.
Yeah, absolutely not.
From the top of my head, Quincy Promes. He's a Dutch international player who plays for them.
Yeah, he's in his mid-20s. I'm not 100%. I'm thinking about, like, I want to play, buy a player like that, I'm leaning more towards Adama Traore. They're about the same age, and I think Traore's shown more.
I mean, the reason I would say I would take Promes over Traore is Traore is going to command a big price tag. Quincy Promes isn't going to command such a big price tag. So in the middle of the table club in the Premier League can snap up Quincy Promes. That's, I think, what the Ajax management staff is talking about here. They're talking about mid-table clubs in the Premier League, in the in La Liga and in Serie A taking these players.
All right, so Larry, I know you got to go, sir. My man. So, parting shots. I'm sorry, I didn't realize you had to get out of here.
No, no worries. Just wanted to thank you guys for the time. You know, educate me a little bit. I always want to talk some soccer because I don't got too many people to talk to it about other than my my 8-year-old who knows more than me about it. So,
bring him on the show.
Yeah, bring him on the
bring
show. We'll have you back, man. It was a pleasure. I thought you left.
No, I wanted to.
That's my bad.
I didn't want to interrupt.
That's my bad. Everybody else does. We'll teach you. All right, man.
You guys have
it was good to see. And so we want to give a big thanks, Larry, for coming on and giving us the city perspective on that potential ban. I want to change up the conversation a little bit and talk about Getafe.
Jesus.
I want to talk about Getafe. About to go to the Champions League for the second time. But mind you, this is a team from a suburb of Madrid who back in 2011 released a adult video because they said, if we can't win new fans, we will breed new fans. I gotta give them props for creative marketing. But this is a little team that could, and they still are. And how awesome is it to see teams like this still in and about the Champions League places? Coach,
I mean,
they have like a like a Tinder, but called a Getta Finder to find other Getta fans to produce more offspring. But what team does this?
I forgot about that. I forgot that they did that. Yes,
yeah.
They did have a cafe Tinder so that they could find more fans and
to produce more.
to make more fans, yeah.
Can we,
you know, me being
them?
A history teacher, my thoughts go right to World War II and Germany and what Hitler is trying to produce is you breed your own kind to have a super, super fandom or super whatever. It's like, are they doing the same thing? But, they have a little sip of coffee here and there in La Liga, then they go into Champions, but like besides that, no one really talks about them. So this is kind of a stretch, especially for doing what 8 years now, 9 years of this zombie porno flick here. But maybe take the crazy team to do some crazy stuff to get their name out there. But this is insane to me.
This is a team that plays in a stadium that is named for a player that never actually played for them. That's what I love.
Makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, I enjoy teams like Getafe in multiple leagues that get into the Champions League for a season. Looking at Getafe's run in, they've got to play Real Madrid and they've got to play Atletico Madrid of the big teams left on their run in. So hopefully they keep the run up. But I think that the more interesting team for a lot of listeners to this show would be Sheffield United making it into the Champions League.
I don't think that's going to happen. I'm sorry. I think that Sheffield United, as great a season as they have had, and I will be happy to be proven wrong. I think they're going to regress back to the mean, and they're going to end up in about 7th-8th place, which will still qualify them for Europe, but not the Champions League. And the worst thing that could happen for them would be to go from promotion to the Champions League. We've seen this. It's Reading all over again. And even if they got in the Champions League, they don't have the wherewithal and the player depth to actually play on Wednesday and Saturday and compete at that level. Too many lone players. Just the lack. It would be a very bad look for Sheffield. But I do enjoy watching them be up there at this point in time.
But are they making a zombie porno though? That's the question. Are they producing more of a fan base in 10 years? To prolong the Sheffield United and Wednesday and all the other Sheffields around. But, like, going back to the Spanish team, it's just crazy that, you know, you have a small team like this trying to make headway and doing these outrageous things, and here it is 8 years later, and they're still talking about it. We're still talking about it.
But that's the story. Like, every time Getafe does anything, we're going to go back to you produced a 70s-era zombie porn movie. And we're unapologetic about the fact that you did it. Like, they owned it.
I mean, they had branding all over that.
They had branding all... All right, somebody watched.
Well, I like the end scene where all the men are walking down the halls with cups filled and looking all manly. Like, oh, Jesus. Like, it's such a propaganda video, but it's hilarious if you guys actually had a chance to watch it.
I think it's good, though, overall, though. It's always good for a kind of a minnow team to just mess up the plan a little bit. I mean, and the fact that they're going about it through such humorous means, but they're playing relatively solid football, and while it's not necessarily in the vein of you know, you can see this team trying to produce, at least if they start raising money and they start actually like getting a bigger fan base, they're doing it in much better means than Manchester City's been doing it, because they're not like cooking the books in a way. But let's see if that's a way to at least try to raise some revenue and get more butts in seats, because that's really what you want. But I mean.
No pun intended, right?
Yeah, exactly. Spain has been a two-team league when it comes to Champions League and league titles, with Atletico Madrid kind of like getting us every now and then kind of like making some waves. But, you know, they've had several squads that are successful in Europe. I mean, you could just always talk about Sevilla and how well they played in the Europa League. So there's spoils around there that can be won. And we've seen, depending on how the teams that were relegated to Europa League and Champions League end up doing when they come over, because often, I mean, you can see that team often winning a Europa League. Hey, you know, maybe they can get to a final in the Europa League, which would be fun to watch.
What is the ceiling for a team like Getafe?
I think it's Europa League.
Is it a Europa League title? Is it a Champions League round of six? Like, what is the ceiling for them? We know that, let's be honest, they're never going to come up with the finances, the players, to really seriously topple the duopoly that is Barcelona and Real Madrid.
Mm-hmm.
What is a successful season for Getafe?
I mean, I think that we're going to find out what a successful season for Getafe is when they play Ajax in the Europa League this Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
If they beat Ajax and they go through to the next round of the Europa League, then I think we can say that Getafe can compete at a Champions League level. Because Ajax is realistically a Champions League round of 16 team.
Is it competing with Getafe or Ajax in the Europa League? Are they a Celtic and a long run in the Europa League is what would be good for them? and think Sevilla, and we got to the finals, we won a final, or playing in the round of 16 in Champions League, maybe getting into the round into the quarterfinals before bowing out, because I don't think any of us think that Getafe has a realistic chance of either winning La Liga or winning the Champions League.
Well, I mean, you know, you've got to ask the Arsenal fans how they think, don't you? Because that was them for quite a few seasons, isn't it?
Y'all go back there.
Shots fired.
That was a shot.
I think the ceiling for Getafe is actually a round of 16 in the Champions League if they're able to get top four in Spain. I think if they could get to, you know, a Europa League semifinal, that should definitely be considered like a huge success for them. I mean, if they final, they should have, you know, they should have a party in the streets and try to shoot like a Dancing Bear kind of film if they wanted to do something like that. But I mean,
We're advocating making another adult video.
I mean,
not.
They've had a nice run up in La Liga. You know, they had a pretty good run. But I think that's kind of like the top of where they're going to end up. I do.
Ah, jeez. I want to see them go as far as I can in a European competition. I think the Europa League is a more legitimate option for them.
Mm-hmm.
But,
agreed,
of course, the Champions League pays
mm-hmm.
more.
Mm-hmm.
You know, getting a good round of 16 draw in the Champions League could be good for them. I would not like – I'll say this. I would not like to have them in my group in the Champions League because they're going to be a tough out. And they'll come in as a number four, that team like Lokomotiv Moscow or something
mm-hmm.
able to beat, but you're not able to beat because they're actually legitimately that good.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't want them in my group in the Champions League. I think
I don't know
League,
if they're really that good though, because you know everything I've been reading about them, they're just like a really hacking team that's had like the most fouls in the game, like 30 or 30 plus, something like that. So what they do, they just kind of disrupt the other team's flow of a game, and they win 1-0, 2-1, like some of these games. So they're kind of a wild card. I don't know how good they are, like their potential and the goal scoring, but what they do on defense and whatnot, it does speak volumes. But yeah, I think round of 16, and that's it. That's a glory for them.
Hey, look, that's a strategy. I'm going to hack you. I'm going to disrupt what you do. That's a strategy.
Okay, Manchester.
Yeah, it's like a Man U team back with Rooney and all them back in the day. Just hack them on the ground, see what happens, and they win the championships. But it works. It's, you know, the strategy works, so why not continue using it?
Let's play with 10 defenders on the pitch. If four of them get sent off, we still have six on the pitch.
It's kind of hard to run, too, when you're on the ground. So, but it works.
They always said the best time to kick somebody is when they're down because it makes it harder for them to get up. So, man, it got late quickly. Champions League is coming up this week. What are we looking for in the Champions League round of 16 as it debuts this weekend or this Tuesday and Wednesday? Coach, what you got for us?
I'll pass on this. Well, I think with PSG and even just rusty Neymar for the last four games, they're going to be kind of rusty. And I don't see a lot of actually anything happening out of them. You know, and, you know, even though they tied against the 19th team in League One, I don't know if they're really clicking right now, per se. So it'll be kind of interesting to see what happens with them and their game. You know, and to see Ajax, to see what the young boys can do. You know, there's a lot of decent games this weekend. But, yeah, I'm kind of looking at the PSG game, to be honest. It's everything we've been talking about the last couple of weeks and all the stories and headlines are kind of just the – sit back and have some popcorn kind of team right now for me.
Well, PSG has Dortmund tomorrow at 3
mm-hmm.
p.m.
Mm-hmm. So it'll be interesting, but again, it matters who shows up for them, and Mbappe didn't play last game either, so it's going to be interesting to see what happens that game.
Tomorrow at 3 p.m., Liverpool returns to the Estadio Wanda Metropolitano. Last season at the Estadio Wanda Metropolitano, Liverpool won the Champions League. This season at the Estadio Metropolitano, I can foresee a 0-0 draw.
Wow, you're calling a 0-0 draw against Atletico.
I mean, it's either going to be a 0-0 draw or it's going to be 1-0 either way, because Atletico Madrid, as poorly as they're playing in the Spanish league right now, they know how to put 12 men in the box. And I do say 12 men realistically because their fan base is intimidating. Now, I don't think Liverpool will be intimidated by their fan base, and Liverpool is very comfortable playing against teams that sit back. But I think Diego Simeone and Atletico Madrid are just the quintessential deep-lying, you hate to play against them team, because they're just dull. And they will hack you to the ground, and they will foul you. And they've only won 10 games in the league this season. They've drawn 10, probably 0-0, and they've lost 4. So, you know, they're a tough team to play against.
Could this be a bogey team for Liverpool insofar as they could escape with a 0-0 and then scrape a away goal in a 1-1 versus Liverpool and advance on away goals, and all of a sudden Liverpool's out at Anfield because Diego Simeone figured out how to get Joao Felix, and yes, I know Joao Felix will be out for this game, but they just pop up with that goal at Anfield after scraping a 0-0, and they just represent that, like, bogey team because they can play so well.
Yeah, but even Anfield is a castle and a dungeon and all in the same place, though. It's so hard for teams coming in there to have any kind of victory lately. Like, the fans are, like, 13th, 14th man. It's hard for anyone to score in Liverpool right now.
I think that if a team can be the bogey team, it might be Atletico Madrid, but at the same time, I trust in Klopp. He's never lost a two-legged tie in a European final for Liverpool. And that goes back to 2016 when he didn't even have his own team in there. We've played against teams that have sat back all season, and we've played through them. And we've struggled at times this season to score goals, but we are still a prolific goal-scoring team. The only team in the Premier League who scored more than us is Manchester City. So I don't really see Atletico Madrid as a bogey team. I think they're going to be a tough team to play against, and you've got to give them the respect that they deserve. But I think that Jürgen Klopp can find a way through that defense. And he can score, and I don't see away goals taking it away from us. Although that comment might come back to bite me in the ass, because you're probably right. It could be a 0-0 and then a 1-1. And you can never tell with Atletico Madrid. That's how they made 2 finals in a row.
Mm-hmm.
Stead, if there's a bogey team left in the Champions League, who is it?
Probably Tottenham. I mean, look, I'm sorry. I know Tottenham's on a little bit of a win streak right now, but the sun is shining on Tottenham right now because they have not really earned these victories they've had recently. They've really been able to just capitalize on some really, really boneheaded play by the opposition. So, I think
and RB Leipzig is also a team that no one really knows too much about. So, again, this is one, like, you know, as Will was saying, a money team. So we'll see what Spurs could do. I mean, I could see them doing exactly what you're talking about. The Atletico is kind of like getting a draw at home, and, you know, Mourinho loves to park the bus and then just squeaking one out, because, you know, say what you want, Son Heung-min is actually playing really well right now and showing he possibly is a world-class player. You know, you could see that happening. I think the game, though, that really is going to be the one that really everyone should pay attention to is the Real Madrid-Man City game. How is Man City going to respond in the tournament that they've just been banned from? And our newfound colleague was saying earlier, that this could be the motivation that they need in order to get, because Man City has to win a Champions League, and that's clearly why they brought in that's what the goal is for them, and it's to win Champions League. So I think that'll be an even bigger game, and, you know, you could see this going 2-1. You could see Man City, you know, getting a really tough fought, you know, 2-2 draw, and going back home with 2 away goals, or I can see them getting drubbed 4-0. So I can't really see them going into Real Madrid and actually, you know, doing that to Madrid. So especially as long as Zidane's still the coach. But I think that's the game that I'm probably going to be paying most attention to, because I just don't really see too much intrigue outside of that, because it does seem pretty one-sided, especially with the way Chelsea's been playing recently. Lyon is actually, they have like a few hurt players right now, especially in their attack. So, but you know, you can see Spurs actually get an ugly win, and we'll have Spurs fans thinking that they're good again when, you know, come on, win a trophy first and then say something. But so
I'm actually interested to see a rematch of the finals with Chelsea and Bayern,
mm-hmm.
because this is one that, at least on paper right now,
mm-hmm.
has the makings of a complete and utter drubbing.
Yeah, it does.
We saw,
and this
Chelsea,
is at Stamford Bridge too.
It's at Stamford Bridge,
mm-hmm.
and to be honest, Stamford Bridge will be a tough place for Bayern to play, because Bayern likes to play wide. And Stamford Bridge is very, very narrow.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to funnel everything into the middle. But Bayern Munich, since the Christmas break, has come out firing. And Chelsea, since the New Year, has done everything but.
Yeah.
This is one of those ones that, if it ended up 4-0, Bayern, I wouldn't be surprised.
Mm-hmm.
If it ends up 1-1, I wouldn't be surprised. But I don't see a lot in between. It's like,
you know,
it's
what I see when I
go
see Bayern going to London. I see a massive scoreline for Bayern. You're thinking your 5-1s, your 7-2s. And that's just to rub salt in the wound for all your Arsenal and all your Tottenham fans. Because, you know, Bayern and the Germans love coming to London, and they love dropping a few bombs on London. So I can see Bayern coming in and absolutely demolishing Chelsea. Because from what I can remember, Chelsea has been on 40 points in the Premier League for the last 2 months. And they just haven't budged from 40
Chelsea
points in the Premier League.
Chelsea was on 40 points in the Premier League in September. They've been on 40 points in the Premier League since September. They came into the season with 40 points in the Premier League. They just haven't won a game since. They're just stuck. It was like, we're going to give you 40 points in the Premier League. Can you move off of it? No.
Nobody else seems to want to take that fourth position, though, so it's still,
yeah,
it is what it is, you know.
They're still in fourth, so.
Yeah.
Sheffield.
They're all central fans right now.
I am also going to pay attention to the Atalanta-Valencia draw. I want to thank the Champions League gods for putting those two teams together, because they're both the outliers in the Champions League round of 16. Mm-hmm. If you had to pull two teams that shouldn't be there, it's them. And at least they're playing each other because one of them is going to make it to the quarterfinals. I don't know what's going to happen when they do, but I just love it. Like, we're going to see them. Atlanta, they were a little team that could to get in there last year. They struggled a bit in both Serie A, and they scrapped their way through the round of 16. And the same with Valencia. Outside of that, I think RB Leipzig and Tottenham is going to be pretty even. Barcelona should have, even with all the problems that Barcelona has had injury-wise, should have no problem with Napoli.
Yeah, the most inconsistent team in there right now.
And I really don't see Juventus struggling that much with Lyon.
I mean, I would just push back on the Napoli thing. Napoli is surprisingly good in the Champions League, as Liverpool has found out in the group stages for the last 2 years. But then again, that was just the group stages for the last 2 years, and they got themselves knocked out in the actual knockout stages. So I think that will be an interesting game.
I think it will be Napoli
high-scored.
The last couple of years was good in Champions League. I don't think this year, and there's just so much around that team this year that leads me not to be convinced by Napoli this year. If you had asked me about this matchup last year, I'd have given it all to I'd have given Napoli a full chance. But this year, as much as gone around this team and all the upheaval and the distractions, I just don't think they have it in. So, we are running out of time. I want to give a big shout-out to Larry Stefani for coming on. Larry, the insurance guy. Carolano and Stefani Insurance, taking care of all your NJ and Pennsylvania insurance needs. Thank you, Larry, for coming on and joining us. To his credit, for his first time, I think he hung in there pretty well. Once again, thank you to Flanagan's Harp and Fiddle, 4844 Cordell Avenue, Bethesda, Maryland, Maryland's premier venue for live sports and entertainment, and the home of the Premier League and the Six Nations, which we did not talk about, but I will be down there this weekend watching Ireland take on England. Hey, Will, you in?
What day is it on?
I have no clue, but we're watching it. That's your fault.
I'll find a way down there.
Big shouts out to producer Paul for keeping us on time, as always. As we go around real quick, parting shots, Coach G.
Two good games this weekend. We have Tottenham Chelsea Saturday and beloved Gunners versus Everton, which is going to be a huge match just because I think we're both sitting around 10th, 9th place, respectively. I think they're up 1 point on us. Games at Arsenal, so it's a huge game. Hopefully, with Man City being, I have a 2-year ban, it kind of gives us a little hope because we're like, 5 points out of being in 5th place. So, with Man City possibly being out, that hopefully we have a little more gusto in our game to maybe get that last spot for next year's champions or even Europa. So, two good games. So, go Gunners.
British Will, parting shots.
Liverpool Atletico tomorrow. Watch it if you want to see Virgil van Dijk go up against the best defensive team in the world last year. Liverpool, West Ham, Liverpool, Watford, Liverpool, Bournemouth, Liverpool, Everton, and Liverpool, Crystal Palace. If they win those 5 games, I'll be a happy person the day after my birthday.
Parting shots, Mr. Stead.
I'm scared to death this week. We're playing Olympiacos in Europa League for Arsenal, and that's a team that's been second best European killer, in my opinion, to Arsenal after Monaco. So keep your head in the sand. Hope this all goes well and we can get to the weekend without embarrassing themselves further.
All right, and the word of the day and final of it is Jermaine. For Larry the Insurance Guy, British Will, Coach G, instead, I am Mike. This has been the Two Guys Soccer Show. We did horrible this week. We'll try and do even worse next week. Thank you all, gentlemen, so much, and I will talk to you another time. Have a great week.